I want to get back once for a few more minutes to summarize the Richard Welch Freedom of Information Act prosecution of researchers, journalists today, because the CIA set up a killing. They knew it in advance, like they knew Sadat was going to be murdered. The killers are directly linked to the same people who have offices that betrayed Sadat and murdered Sadat. That is why it's so important that I said remember those names of Thomas Kleins, Theodore Shackley, Frank Turple, George Kirkola, Edwin Wilson. Get them in your head because they have been the assassination teams in the past and they're still functioning today and overthrowing countries to their own like. In 1973, when Richard Helms threw away and destroyed all the records of the mind control programs and went to Iran, he became the CIA, he was the CIA director, he became the ambassador to Iran to continue with the technological equipment that the Shah needed and so forth. Richard Helms was in Iran. From Iran came a man identified as part of the CIA named Albert Hakim, who came to Palo Alto, all the way from Iran to Palo Alto, to set up Stanford Technology that first hired Mr. Frank Turple, and through Turple met Edwin Wilson. Albert Hakim allegedly was paid $25 million at one time by Edwin Wilson for some job to do. And the CIA group of Theodore Shackley and Wilson and Kleins and Turple were all working under Richard Helms when he was director of the CIA from 1966 to 1973. And when he goes to Iran, it's no different. He still starts dummy fronts out in California that are under the wing of people working for Hewlett-Packard. Packard was Secretary of Defense. Now, Richard Helms is in disgrace. He goes to Iran. He's been covered with perjury at the Watergate for lying about his role and their role in murdering Allende in Chile. He has lost the war in Vietnam, and Mr. Colby, the head of the Phoenix program who works with these bastards, is brought back to become the director of the CIA. And he also is the attorney of Frank Nugent from the notorious Nugent Hand Bank. When that bank collapsed, they never gave up their hold. He's in Iran. Iran, he has direct links to Turple, Klein, Shackley, and Wilson, even though he's in Iran. He's mad at covert action, a counter-spy. Watergate has come along. There's a team of muckrakers poking holes into the CIA, myself included. Frank Turple goes from the corporation in California, the Stanford Technology, he's in the CIA. He's stationed with a dummy front for their operations at Air Transport Place in Cyprus as a CIA station. And Richard Welch is killed, and they blame covert action, and all of those people go back to the CIA. Welch was murdered December 23rd, 1975. Ellsworth, who worked with his whole gang in Egypt and around the world, knew about Welch in advance. He worked with Richard Helms, and then the New York Times, a week after Welch was murdered, had an article by William Colby, then director of the CIA, because Richard Helms is in Iran, saying that he, along with President Ford, suggested that naming Mr. Welch in the Counterspy magazine was a factor contributing to his death, and they blamed the Fifth Estate, the published Counterspy, for the Welch murder. And I will tell you right now that whether they jail us or not, we will continue this investigation. This team have done these murders. They did them in the past. They're doing them in the future. And they can take their freedom of information and lock it up. The truth will come out no matter what because it's rolling along pretty good. And they're scared about this. They want to prosecute all the journalists and newspaper for naming their names. I mentioned last week that every time we want to say CIA, we can refer to the syndicate. The Nazi syndicate. There's no law against talking about Nazis. And if Reinhard Gehlen, the chief of Hitler's intelligence, formed the CIA, and he worked with organized crime with Lucky Luciano, Maya Lansky, and Sam Giancana, and those people for their hit teams, refer to them as the syndicate. And a friend suggested today, if I can't talk about Frank Turple on the air, I'll call him Sturple. If I can't talk about Edwin Wilson, I'll call him Swilson. And if we can't call William Colby, we'll call him Scolby. We'll just add an S to their names, and you'll know who I'm talking about. And if you don't know, you can call me. Now, this last week, there were several articles by Jack Anderson that are about the most scandalous I have read in a long time, and I've read a lot. I brought in the outline of four articles I'd like to share with you, but there obviously won't be time. We'll take them one at a time and continue next week. The article that Jack Anderson had this week is called Egyptians in a Scandal. And this is the story. The scandal, he said, this is verbatim, of extraordinary proportions, involves Egypt's highest leaders and the CIA and Pentagon officials who made a backroom deal that gave a Palestinian company exclusive multi-million-dollar contract to ship arms to Egypt. What he said was that corrupt Egyptian officials at the time of the peace accords between Begin and Sadat made a deal and pressured the government, the CIA and Pentagon, pressured a particular route that the arms to Anwar Sadat would go to. And Jack Anderson, who doesn't use these words very often, said it is rare when corruption can be traced to the highest levels of government. The trails of evidence in the Egyptian arms deal point to two of the most powerful men in Egypt today who stood at either side of Sadat when he was assassinated, and they are now in control of the country. What he didn't mention, he was so shocked, is that Richard Nixon was in Dallas the day that Kennedy was killed, and LBJ was in the car behind him, and Gerald Ford was on the Warren Commission, and President Carter was also covering up the House Select Committee on the Kennedy and King murders. And Ford is making profits now off of the Kuwait deals, and Billy Carter is linked to Vesco, Turple, and the assassination teams. I've seen scandals of corruption, the highest levels of government in this country, but let's get back to that. Now, this involves Hosni Mubarak, the now president of Egypt, and the defense minister, Abu Ghazala. Either one of those men was sitting to the right and left of Sadat when he was murdered. Sadat got 28 bullets in his heart and body at a range from 2 to 10 feet, and this has all been documented, and they just brushed it off and went on to become the heads of the Egyptian government today. He says that on June 25, 1979, Mubarak was told about a company called Tersam, T-E-R-S-A-M. It was a little-known shipping company owned by a Palestinian by the name of Ali Sharafa, and that the offices were in Geneva. It was a small dummy front. In Geneva was one office, and in Washington was the office of Thomas Kleins. Now, Thomas Kleins of the CIA is the man who worked with Wilson and Turple and was funding international terrorism. And so that this story directly links to them, but it isn't about them. It's about Sadat's government. They made a deal against all advice of people that knew it, but mostly it was secret, that all the weapons of the peace accord that Israel signed with Egypt that would go to Egypt, which would be billions of dollars, would go to this company called Tersam that was actually a front, and that 50% of the weapons would go to Sadat and 50% would go to the Palestinians. Now, that what they're saying in this article, and there were two-part series, was that Israel and Egypt made a peace treaty, and part of it was that if Sadat took this position, he would get an increase of weapons to control Egypt, and that the Pentagon and the CIA and Jimmy Carter promised him billions of dollars, but the condition was that it would go by way of Palestinians and to two people who did not like a group of people that were the enemies of Sadat, that they sent it to, routed it to PLO and those people, the Palestinians, specifically a particular person who was the enemy of Sadat for making the peace treaty. So that Carter says, I'll make peace, let's have this wonderful peace treaty, and then he sends 50% of the weapons to the enemies of Sadat, who are the very people involved, sat on the right and left of him the day of the murder. They double-tricked him down the line, these scumbags, and this is the story, or the breaking of the story. July 2, 1979, Vice President Mubarak had word that they were going to send these weapons to this Palestinian supporter, Ali Sharafa. The shipping firm, he was told, was not qualified to cover the weapons. It was secretly controlled. It was controlled by a Palestinian front linked to the United Arab Emirates, and it was a hotbed of anti-Sadat Palestinian supporters. So that one reason the Palestinians sat back and let Sadat sign the peace treaty with Israel was that they would begin to get weapons under the table to take over Egypt away from Sadat, but they would be sent by those people, those scumbags that were sitting on the plane before the man's body was even cold, who were giving speeches about the PLO, who were on the radio wanting to shake the hands of the man who killed him. The Jack Anderson article says the case involved Mubarak's brother-in-law. That's the now president of Egypt. His brother-in-law, General Munir Sabet, that he arranged that these weapons would be sent to the Palestinian groups, the brother-in-law. Mubarak knew about this, and he did nothing. He didn't rescind the contract. This is Jack Anderson. He didn't hinder the execution. And there is no evidence that Sabet, the brother-in-law of Mubarak, the partner with Jimmy Carter in the Egyptian peace deal, ever told any Egyptian intelligence official. But the CIA and the Pentagon were shipping weapons to Sadat's enemies, and this was kept from Sadat. Now, in Washington, D.C., the headquarters of Hosni Mubarak's brother-in-law, his General Munir Sabet, is now chief of military procurement for Egypt. He made the money for sending these weapons, and he lives in Washington, D.C. 2 years ago, he was assistant military attaché in Washington, D.C., involved in the Tersem deal up to his ears. That's Jack Anderson. June 14, 1970, Sabet confirmed that Tersem, the company in Switzerland and in the Washington, D.C. office run by Thomas Kleins, and that's Wilson and Turpel's offices again, the front. This Thomas Kleins working close with Turpel, Wilson, and Coca-Cola, had been awarded the shipping contract in secret for weapons going to Sadat. Now, how far did the Tersem scandal go? Jack Anderson asked. General Munir Sabet, the brother-in-law of Mubarak, was an assistant. He was in Washington, D.C. And at the time of Sadat's murder last week, General Abu Ghazala, the defense minister of Egypt, who set up the shipments, was the man sitting next to Sadat when he was murdered, along with Mubarak. On one side was Mubarak, whose brother-in-law made the deal with the CIA to ship the weapons to the Palestinians, while Sadat got half, and they were going to the enemies of Sadat. Mubarak sat on one side and became the president, and Ghazala, who was deeply involved in the Tersem deal, sending weapons to the PLO and getting ready to, eventually they killed Sadat, he was the man sitting to the left of Sadat the day he was murdered. In April 2, 1979, Jack Anderson said they have memos from the Pentagon saying the appropriate officials of the Egyptian Minister of Defense, those are the biggies, the defense manager is Ghazala, have appointed Tersem. The man is Ali El Shafara, and he works with CIA covert agent Thomas Kleins, who was deputy of covert operations in the CIA. They became the exclusive agent for all military imports from the United States to Egypt. Jack Anderson wrote, it is a little-known company. They're little-known individuals. Their offices are in Geneva and Washington. The Washington office is run by the Central Intelligence Agency. They were directly linked to the PLO. They were directly linked to the assassination teams, and they got the exclusive shipment. Anderson wrote that in Washington, D.C., Defense Minister Ghazala, the one sitting next to Sadat, and General Munir Sabet were in charge of the procurement of these weapons. They met at an Army-Navy country club in June 14th of 1970, and they sent the contracts for Tersem and the lucrative shipping arrangements. Then some person got word at a higher level that this was going on, so they bribed them with a subcontract at this particular country club. They met them at the Army-Navy country club and bribed them that if they kept quiet about Tersem, which was a Palestinian organization front, dummy front in Switzerland with the CIA offices in Washington, that this person kept quiet, they would get a subcontract, and they paid them off. Now, the Egyptians were worried that there would be word of their behind the scenes with the Palestinians, with Sadat's enemies, and they would be known in Egypt. And General Kamal Hassan Ali, who's now deputy prime minister and foreign minister, was involved with these contracts at the time he authorized them. At the time, he was the defense minister, but now Ghazala, who was sitting next to Sadat when he was murdered, is the defense minister. He authorized these April 2nd, 1979. He said that Tersem will have the exclusive shipping rights for the American arms. So in Egypt, at the highest levels around Sadat, and in the United States at our White House with these scumbags wheeling and dealing with the lives of people, shipping these things over, Jimmy Carter making these arrangements under the table and shipping arms to the PLO and to those people that were on either side. Imagine those cold-blooded freaks going to a funeral and appearing and discussing business on the plane coming back. But the feeling they must have in making profit. There's Gerald Ford making profits over Kuwait buying his Santa Fe oil stock company, Lock, Stock, and Barrel, while we're building up the Middle East. And there's Jimmy Carter wheeling and dealing with his sanctimonious little innocent baby face, you know, that he put on the Mr. Innocence and Human Rights. Jack Anderson wrote that General Ali gave the exclusive rights to TIRSAM, which was the CIA, and the Pentagon, and the PLO. The next day, Jack Anderson had part two of this story on TIRSAM, October the 15th, 1981. And don't look for it in the San Francisco Chronicle. It was cut down. The Monterey Herald has the full-size article. He reviewed that TIRSAM is the exclusive contract for shipping arms to Egypt. It was founded by a Palestinian, and it may still be controlled by him. Some of the munitions intended for Sadat were diverted to Palestinian groups. That is why when I was asked by mail, and I answered on the air when I said that the United States was funding the PLO, what I meant was we're not working at a diplomatic level. We're working under the table at both sides. And also the CIA that was funding Gaddafi was funding the people that killed Sadat and funding Sadat. We play a dirty game. And at some time, these things have to really get above board and be separated. Jack Anderson wrote on the 15th of October, these groups, the munitions were sent by TIRSAM that were meant for Sadat were diverted to Palestinian groups that were opposed to Anwar Sadat, the Palestinians and the anti-Sadat forces. They used their connections to get valuable intelligence working about the working of American and Egyptian intelligence. What makes this matter worse, Jack Anderson wrote, what makes the situation more startling is the involvement of the cabinet of ministers of Sadat and other high Egyptian officials involved in the secret contract manipulations. Amazingly, he says, the arms contract with TIRSAM wound up with Ali El-Sharafa. It is a role of United States betrayal. Ali El-Sharafa was part of the Palestinian group. Persons associated with this deal were the Egyptian big shots. This is Jack Anderson, Brigadier General Munir Sabet, the brother-in-law of Mubarak, who became the president of Egypt when Sadat was murdered, Kamel Hassan Ali, who was the deputy premier and foreign minister, who is now foreign minister, and Abu Ghazala, the currently Egyptian defense minister, who sat at the other side of Sadat. Abu Ghazala was on the left, Sadat was in the middle, and Hosni Mubarak was on the right. They were lined up in a row, and guess who got shot? The American connection to TIRSAM, according to Jack Anderson, the Palestinian organization was Thomas Kleins, deputy chief of covert actions in the Central Intelligence Agency. Thomas Kleins was a friend and co-worker with CIA Edwin Wilson, and Wilson has strong links to the PLO. This is Jack Anderson this week giving these revelations because, again, it was Edwin Wilson who was working for a company, a Stanford Technology in California with direct links to Hewlett-Packard, the multi-billion-dollar defense contractor with strong tentacles to the Reagan administration, to the Carter administration, and Ford going back, the Pentagon administration. They hired Turpel, who worked for the CIA, located in Greece and other places, who associated with Edwin Wilson. And Edwin Wilson was no slack. One night soon, I'll do just an entire program on maybe Edwin Wilson or a half hour on Wilson and some of these names. It was Edwin Wilson who was behind the scenes to get the arms shipping contract for TIRSAM, the Palestinian firm. Now, this is Jack Anderson. He is saying Edwin Wilson from the United States set up Thomas Kleins, who was deputy chief of covert actions in the CIA, to get the contract for these firms. So the CIA, again, headed and started by Reinhard Gehlen, Hitler's chief of intelligence, had a group of operatives that, such as Wilson, Turpel, Korkola, that funded Carlos the Jackal, that have been assassinating and doing terror all over the world, working for Amin. And what they've done is set up a network that looked like the left, the terror network, and actually is coming from the CIA. But to get back to the Jack Anderson article, the American connection to TIRSAM, the Palestinian organization of weapons and technology that was meant for Egypt, that went to the PLO, half of it, was Thomas Kline's deputy chief of covert operations in the CIA with his offices in Washington, D.C., and Thomas Kline's was a friend and co-worker of Edwin Wilson with links to the PLO. You see, Wilson can arm Gaddafi, he can arm Amin, he can arm Egypt and Sadat, he arms the PLO and the IRA also. And I'll mention that briefly, there are links to that. It was Edwin Wilson who was behind the scenes for the contract to Tersem. This is quite a gang. They go all the way out to a lot of murders and then on down the line to the Allende murder, the Letelier murder, and a whole list of domestic and international murders a mile long. Some of those murders are well written in the book by Donald Freed on Death on Embassy Row. Jack Anderson said the Pentagon, the CIA, and the military industry described the arms deal after the Camp David Accords as being the most suspicious they've ever seen. Can you imagine? The Camp David Accord was signed in March 1979. The provision was to send American arms to Egypt, billions of dollars. Legitimate American companies and Egyptian people went about the contracts and got estimates for the deal. They were all pushed out. They thought that they could compete in selling these weapons to Sadat, but in April 1979, they got suspicious, Anderson wrote, because the contract had already been signed to Tersem and nobody knew about the company. At the time, Tersem was a little office in Geneva and Washington. It had no experience in shipping. It was a dummy front for funding the PLO. Yusin Salem, an Egyptian intelligence man, was the front for the office from Egypt. Thomas Kline's CIA covert deputy chief was the Washington connection, and the silent partner was Ali Sharafa in this. Ali Sharafa put up the money to get the dummy office going, but of course, when the shipping started, there was a lot of money. Jack Anderson asked, how did Tersem or Sharafa get these huge contracts, billions of dollars to be shipped, and how, where they went? There was pressure from the United States, from the Pentagon, from the CIA, and also from the people inside Egypt who were against Sadat. They would gain from his death in dealing with the United States and the Pentagon. Egyptian sources said, and this is the Jack Anderson article, the Pentagon, the CIA, forced the Tersem contract, but also friends of Thomas Kline's of the covert operations in the CIA said the Egyptians pressed for Tersem. Each of them was pushing. Egyptian Deputy Premier Foreign Minister Hassan Ali said the Americans insisted that Tersem be used because of their CIA connections, and he insisted that it be used so that the weapons would go to the PLO and the Palestinians. The Pentagon claimed they didn't know about Tersem's background. Can you imagine having a peace accord and not knowing where the weapons are going? They claimed they didn't know where they were going, but it's impossible because the CIA was up to their ears, and it was a scandalous story that Jack Anderson broke about these operations. I hope you follow more of it and keep following it. I have some more on this subject for weeks to come on these scandalous operations. Just before Sadat was murdered, there was an article, Richard Reeves, a syndicated column on how Ronald Reagan kind of serves his presidency alone. And he said, it's a shame that people like Richard Nixon, Gerald Ford, and Jimmy Carter can't be used. But he said, nobody really has any use for them. And the minute Sadat was murdered, he resurrects Ford, Nixon, and Carter, and he's put to use to selling the AWACS. Now, there's an article in the San Francisco Examiner pertinent to the Jack Anderson stories, an interview with ex-prime minister from Israel, Yitzhak Rabin. And he was in San Francisco. Evidently, he missed the funeral of Sadat, but he was over here at that time. And he said that 2 months before Sadat was murdered, he had resumed his peace talks with Israel, and the Reagan administration was caught by surprise. He said that they didn't take an active role in it. They weren't giving it any priority. And that's Alexander Haig and Caspar Weinberger, who want that war in the Middle East, who want to push the weapons, who don't want peace. Anwar Sadat was resuming his peace with Israel. And he went on to say, Rabin said, I believe that the Reagan administration pressured Jimmy Carter to help push the sale of AWACS to Saudi Arabia by suggesting that his administration might reveal hitherto unreleased information on Carter's dealing with the Arabs and participants at those meetings. What he said was that Jimmy Carter was pressured to push the AWACS cell at this time because he was being blackmailed for the role he took in the past. And it certainly seems obvious by the Jack Anderson exposés that that's exactly what went on. He said Carter had voided the Camp David peace treaty when he himself helped negotiate by pushing the sale of AWACS to Saudi Arabia, because he said it is counter to what he opposed. Saudi Arabia had opposed the Peace David Accords. The part of the Camp David Accords Saudi Arabia was against, and now he was negating it as soon as Sadat was dead and going with Saudi Arabia. And, of course, from all of this, we have to gather that Jimmy Carter was with Saudi Arabia all along. He went on to say the PLO leader Yasser Arafat wanted to shake the hands of the man who killed Sadat last week, but the two presidents didn't even wait until they came back from the funeral to encourage the extremists. With Mubarak as number two man in this country, you support your boss as vice president 120%. A clever number two man keeps his real thoughts to himself. He has no trust, evidently, in Mubarak. But what Rabin was talking about was that evidently Israeli intelligence had wind of the betrayal that Jimmy Carter had made at the time of the Camp David Accords and the celebrations in Egypt and in Washington and the signing of those papers. The San Francisco paper this morning had an article how Jimmy Carter tried to set up secret talks with the PLO in 1977. He was not only talking to them, but he was sending weapons. And before the fellow was hardly buried, he was praising the people who he would deal with next, who had been responsible for celebrating the funeral. And these men were just sitting on the plane calling a press conference and lauding over the fact that now we must deal with the other people, not when it turns out they were dealing all along with them. Mary McCrory didn't miss this behavior on the plane. She has a syndicated column. She said the immediate use of the assassination of Sadat was to sell the AWACS. The Secretary of State took the opportunity the morning of the tragedy to say that delaying the sale would make a mockery of Sadat. You could go out in the street and pick any ordinary citizen at random and get a more eloquent version of what Anwar Sadat died for, she said. Even William Buckley, the awful person, the right-winger that William Buckley is, came out and had an article on Gerald Ford and Jimmy Carter choosing an odd platform for which to tell the world we should negotiate with the PLO. He said it isn't established yet who was responsible for the death, and these men were talking about the PLO before they had an opportunity to even investigate it, and he said Ford and Carter were disgusting in their behavior. The Wall Street Journal had an editorial on their behavior. It said, Gerald Ford and Jimmy Carter were riding back to Cairo on the plane Saturday when they loosened their shirts and collars, called in the reporters, and before you knew it, they came out in favor of the PLO and one of the outfits that had cheered the assassination of the man whose funeral the two had attended. Being out of office must be more dulling to political instincts and the sense of appropriateness that we had imagined. And we could go on their behavior of selling AWACS and using the funeral. But the most scandalous thing about this murder was that he was shot point blank, 28 bullets in his body, that the men on either side of him were involved of the shipment of the weapons to Sadat's enemies. One is the president now, one is defense minister, and they worked with our CIA, with Thomas Kleins, with Edwin Wilson, with the killer team that I am going to carry through with you through each country, through each death, and show you how they've operated and how they've been protected and how the Justice Department is protecting them today. They are the core of some terrible operations that this country has to account for. So keep those names in mind, and I'll use them even if I'm not supposed to. In the meantime, this is Mae Brussel. This is the end of the hour. I'll be back with you next week. Take care of yourselves, and I'll see you next week, or be speaking with you next week.
This has been World Watchers International with noted conspiracy investigator Mae Brussel. This program originates from Carmel, California.